Hello, so we're back and we are talking about Windows 10. Joining me is security expert Chris Hallam. We are going to explain and talk a little bit about some security enhancements inside of Windows 10.
Great, thanks for having me, appreciate it.
No worries. So where would you start with security? What are we kind of thinking about there inside of security and the way that we're doing things differently in Windows 10?
Sure. If we roll back the clock to Windows 8 and we look at the threats that were impacting environments at that time, we took a number of steps. We focused on malware resistance. We focused a little bit on identity and data protection. And I think we really moved the needle forward kind of incrementally across a wide variety of areas. And I remember in the moment it felt like, wow, these are really significant changes. And the reality was that they were. But what we've noticed in the last couple of years as we were working on Windows 8 is the threat landscape has been changing dramatically. We're no longer at the bottom of a hockey stick, kind of slowly moving and incrementally moving with bigger, faster, stronger threats and attackers. We're kind of moving up the stick.
Yeah.
And it's really kind of a revolution of threats. It's no longer the evolution that we're used to. And so while we'll continue to focus on the same areas, it's still going to be about identity, it's still going to be about data protection, it's still going to be about threat resistance, the type of investments we've made, I think, are more impactful. So rather than delivering features that are maybe feeling more incremental, they address a subset of the problem space and area, in Windows 10 you'll see that we actually decisively address entire classifications of issues with solutions that maybe in some ways can eradicate the issue in its entirety.
Yeah, I mean, the one that comes to mind for me immediately is probably that starting point. The first thing that you do when you get hold of your machine, you log on. So We've mentioned things around Azure Active Directory and things we're doing there. What are the kind of the thoughts around identity and where we're taking identity?
Yeah, I mean, identity is actually, for me, it's actually one of the most exciting areas, although I think everybody will pick and choose their own area of interest. But identity is particularly interesting. If we look at the type of challenges we're having with passwords, we're no longer thinking about passwords being a problem. Passwords are actually a real-time crisis.
Yeah.
You have to move to something better. And you know, most of the organizations I talk to, they go, well, I have two-factor authentication. Mm-hmm. And when I double-click on them and ask them, well, where are you using that? It's like, well, we only use it for VPN, for remote access.
Yeah.
And I'm like, well, that's a good start. But here's how people are using your passwords on your devices and not using maybe your VPN to break in. And then they start really realizing, well, you know what, we need two-factor for log on onto their devices, not just the VPN. And then they start scratching their heads going, well, that solution's too expensive. It's not only expensive, it's also creates a lot of friction for our end users. Mm-hmm. And so they're just kind of assuming some risks right now. And so with Windows 10, our goal was to create a two-factor authentication solution that address the costs issues, it address the user friction issue. It's one that will work as good as for consumers as well as the enterprises. It's easy to deploy. So we're very excited about the potential there of that solution.
Yeah, it's something that I think you really hit the nail on the head there. When passwords are in a little bit of a crisis, if you walk around any large corporate, you'll see people, you'll walk up to a desk, particularly trying this in the call center is great fun. You walk up to a desk, you lift up a keyboard, and then you find a post-it note.
Oh, absolutely.
And written on the post-it note is today's password. Because folks don't have that capacity. It's too many things to remember. They've got passwords for Facebook, they've got passwords for Twitter, they've got passwords for every service they connect into.
Yeah.
And they can't remember the one for the corporate desktop as well.
Yeah.
So they just write it down. And particularly in some organizations, you'll find that there's passwords written down there for 10 different systems
on
the same post-it note. And it's so common, it kind of has become a little bit of a joke. So being able to bring these multiple factors of authentication in every single time that somebody signs in is it's incredibly useful.
Yeah.
I guess one of the things that people have kind of gotten used to is the fact that the device that they're signing into also has an identity on it as well. Because it's got Active Directory membership on that particular machine. We're starting to see less machines being joined to Active Directory on-prem as well. So the idea that people can bring a device to a workplace join starts to become a kind of an authentication and identity factor. But the device itself is a second factor of authentication as well.
Yeah, our solution is actually designed specifically to do that. One of the challenges that we see with today's two-factor authentication solution is the friction issue that I mentioned, right? And so the friction is that I need to carry something that I'm not used to carrying or something that's I got to connect it to my keychain, or it's a smart card, so I put it in my wallet, or maybe I hang it around my neck, or whatever makes sense. And it's just enough friction that it's kind of a problem for users. So wouldn't it be great if our second factor could be the thing that we always have? So it could be the PC that you have in front of you, or maybe better yet, maybe it's your mobile phone.
Yeah.
And so we think that using a mobile phone, or maybe even other devices that we're not talking about just yet, but a mobile phone's going to be the thing we're optimizing for today with Windows 10. And now your mobile phone will carry your credential and allow you to log into your PC there or another one without having to enroll each and every single one of these devices as a trusted device on your network. And so we really think that that's going to be the future of two-factor auth.
Yeah, so we're going to move into this world where it's not just based around that little piece of password. It's going to be what you know, what you have, is the move forward.
Yep.
What else is happening inside of Windows 10 from a kind of security point of view?
Yeah. Well, there's really kind of probably three things that we probably have time to talk about that are interesting. You know, the identity piece is great. We have a session here this afternoon, in fact, that we're going to go into great detail on it. Another thing that's related to identity that's very important, I think, is, well, what happens after authentication? Well, once you authenticate with your single factor, your two-factor authentication option, well, what do you get? Well, you get an access token, and that access token allows you to connect to all your machines on the network without being asked to sign in yet again. So I can go to SharePoint, I can go to my file servers, I can get email, and hopefully I'll never be asked to sign in again. Well, this access token is also a very interesting thing for attackers to get access to,
yep.
Right? Because in this case, once they have it, they have your identity effectively. They don't know your username necessarily, they don't know your password, but they have your access token. And so that is as good as having your username and password.
Yeah.
And so when somebody can get this token, and they do it using tools like Mimikatz, and so a scenario where you could maybe get this token is, let's imagine that there's a vulnerability on the system, you're successful in exploiting that vulnerability, you gain maybe admin privilege, and then you can run a tool like Mimikatz to extract this token and take it, and then from there you can move around the network with it and access those servers as if it's you, without ever being asked for a username or password. So we call that the pass the hash attack. You can do that with Kerberos tickets as well. So pass the ticket, pass the hash. And so what we've done in Windows 10 is we've taken these tokens, which were being protected by Windows in a software-based store, which was then susceptible to malware or applications with high levels of privilege. What we've done, and we're putting them inside of a container, and this container is something that we call a VSM, or a virtual secure mode. And so the VSM is basically a mini operating system. So think of it as a Windows core operating system. It's very, very small, so it doesn't require a gigabyte of memory footprint like a VM would. It's a very small OS that has just enough capability to run the LSA service. And the LSA service is used for all of our authentication brokering. So we run that in this protected container, and the tokens that we get are in this container as well. And in the event that the kernel is compromised, even the kernel doesn't have access to take content out of the container. And so we have basically a system of isolation where we can isolate one of our most important Windows components in an area that is immune to kernel vulnerability exploits. And so it's a very significant mitigation. We can't promise that pass a hash is not possible. There could be a problem in the architecture of this solution. There could be bugs. But it is an architectural solution to eliminate pass the hash and pass the ticket, as opposed to what we've done in the past, which was just a defense that made it a little bit harder. So we think this will be very decisive in dealing with that threat.
Yeah, it's one of those extra layers of protection, which is kind of really important to have in place there. I guess it's one of those layers of protection which a lot of folks may have missed out a few of those steps on the journey by now. So if there's somebody that's out there that's kind of not moved off of a significantly older operating system, say XP, some of these things are going to be really new. The mitigations that we've actually already got in place, and then we're just layering additional mitigations on top.
Right.
It's got to make a really big difference to people. It's got to be a reason to start to get modern, I guess.
Yeah, I remember when we did Windows 8, some analysts took a look at the security features we had, and they tried to quantify them, and a number of people quantified them in this way. They said that the difference in security between Windows XP and 7, okay, if we think about basically three operating systems, maybe more if you count these large service packs we did in between, that the difference between 7 and 8 was just the same.
Yeah.
So think about that. I mean, if you think about the delta of time between XP and 7 and 7 and 8, That's a lot of security improvements, and so that's exciting. So if you haven't moved to Windows 8, right, there's a lot of great features there. And when you move to 10, there's another layer. And as I mentioned earlier, these features we're doing in 10 are not so incremental. They're very decisive, right? Mm-hmm. We're gonna. I don't want to say we've solved identity, right? But
I think that'd be a really difficult thing to say that we solved identity would be a big kind of thing to throw out there. But
so we can't say that. Yeah. But this is so substantial compared to anything we've done in the past. Like we had virtual smart cards in 8.1. That was very incremental. This is virtual smart card like for the entire world. So very interesting. And then when it comes to data protection, which maybe we'll talk about here in a few minutes, that's another area where we've filled a big gap in our information protection stack. And then when it comes to malware, we're doing some interesting things there as well.
Yeah, let's dive into the data protection a little bit and just explore a bit of that, because data protection is always an interesting place. When you look at the kind of the things that we put in place there, most people will probably think data protection and then think about being able to do encryption and those kind of areas, but there's other layers of the data protection stack that we have in place as well.
Yeah, so you know, if we think about where we've been with our information protection stack of features, we have on maybe the far left here, we have BitLocker, mm-hmm. which is a great solution. In Windows 8, we improved it dramatically. It's really easy to deploy. Mm-hmm. It addresses, I think, almost even the highest end organizations are looking at that as a great offering for them to deploy.
Things like use-based encryption makes that so much faster.
Yeah, exactly. And so, but it only protects data when it's on the device. So the second I take a file and I move it to a USB or I send an email, it's no longer protected. It's really just about protecting your device when you lose it or it gets stolen, that we know an attacker won't have access to it. So that's on one end of the spectrum. And then on the far right, maybe, we have great sharing protection. So with Windows Rights Management Services, or now Azure Rights Management Services, you have the ability to take content and limit who within your organization has access to it. So if I want maybe just you and me have access mm-hmm. to an email thread or a document, I can set access control policy on it. Or if I want to share it B2B or B2C, I can use the power of Azure to enable key exchange and enable me to share protected content to anybody in the world.
Yeah, and it's super, I mean, that's one of the main uses for RMS, actually, is sharing with partners, because organizations, they can never exist on their own. They have to do business with people. And as soon as you've got to move kind of any kind of protected information around that, organizations very quickly need to put that kind of solution in place. The mm-hmm. difficulty, I guess, is that users don't always play ball there and do things as you'd expect.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, one of the challenges of rights management services is it really, in most configurations, requires the user to opt in to protect content. So I need to make a choice. Let's share this between ourselves, but nobody else. Mm-hmm. And so it requires action. And so with Windows 10, what we want to do is create the conditions so that you don't have to take action, right? Wouldn't it be great if Windows automatically took any corporate content and contained it within the organization, or at least limited access to those who are considered trusted corporate users. So mm-hmm. everybody at Microsoft for our scenario. And so that's what our data protection solution for 10 is all about. It's about taking the opt-in nature out of the process and making file-level encryption something that is automatic. And so what Windows 10 has the ability to do is it is able to differentiate between corporate data and personal data based on the origin of where the data comes from. Mm-hmm. So you'll be able to set a policy that says, these are locations on our network that we consider corporate, right? This is the corporate email server. These are our file servers. They're on these IP address ranges. They're using these DNS names. And so you can define, you know, what is the breadth of your organization. So for instance, one of our policies would be, you know, anything at corp.microsoft.com is a corporate network location. Mm-hmm. Our enterprise data protection solution knows when content comes from those locations, the networking stack knows where it came from. And so we can say, hey, we know that's a network location, it's corporate. Let's go ahead and encrypt this at the file level and consider that a corporate data. Mm-hmm. So in real time, as you're bringing content to your device, Windows knows what's corporate versus what's personal. But it happens transparently behind the scenes, and you don't have to think about it. Now, there is one scenario where it gets a little tricky, which is, well, what happens when I create new original content? Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah. How do I differentiate there?
I know it's
there's all sorts of ways we could do this, right? Okay. We could do file classification services. We could look inside the file. Mm-hmm. There's lots of different things we can do. For Windows 10, what we'll be doing is we're going to give the user the choice in the user experience to define this document I'm creating in Office as a personal or a corporate. Mm-hmm. Now, that might be a choice that's maybe too much for your users in your organization. So we have some policies that allow IT to gain a little more control. Mm-hmm. IT can set policy that says, this specific application, this line of business application, is ours. And so any content, whether it's a document or a temporary files, anything that any artifact generated by it, we want that to be protected with the corporate data protection capability. So you can set policy, these are our apps, these are apps that are considered personal, and then the user doesn't have to make a choice, it happens behind the scenes. But in the case of an app that may be used for personal and also for corporate use, we have this UI capability that you'll see in our save dialog that allows the user to make the right choice for them.
So this is a super interesting area of technology, because some other operating systems implement the kind of containerized approach to data management, where the data inside of that container is corporate. So applications which are non-corporate can't access the data, and if you somehow find a way to remove the data from the container, the protection is lost.
Yeah,
we're actually moving to a super interesting world where the protection stays with the document wherever that document travels, presumably.
Yeah, exactly. So the challenge with the solutions we see in the marketplace today is, and by the way, we consider ours a container-based solution. Our container, though, is different. It's a container at the file level. So every single file, every document, any content item, the files for your apps that are considered corporate, they will be protected with an encryption container. And then Windows becomes a broker of access control between them, right? So an application that's not protected with this security, right, that's, let's say, a public application or personal application, will not have access to corporate policies or files or even apps, for that matter, because of the policies that you set. So.
Yeah. So you have that control to say, this app can't access this data.
Exactly.
It's a nice place to be.
Yeah. And it goes beyond that even. You can even say, these are the apps that have access to my corporate VPN. So it's a little bit of an orthogonal thing, but it's something we did in band with this. And you know, as we move into a DLP scenario, we want to make sure that malicious apps or apps that shouldn't have access to corporate networks can be gated. And so we have a policy that allows you to say, these are the applications on the device that I trust, and I will allow connect to my VPN.
So we can literally say, this application is going to create secure corporate data, and it's going to have a connection back to the corporate network. And that corporate network is going to be a secure tunnel back in. So we've got a kind of single management point, essentially, to say, this app, it's a business app.
Yep, exactly. Yeah, and then just to kind of complete the thought on the container discussion, so as I mentioned, we have a container around every file, basically, so we're a file-level encryption solution. The thing that, and then we have Windows being a broker of access control, the thing I think that makes this solution maybe better than others, or is at least a compelling differentiator, is the fact that when we look at a solution like Samsung Knox or maybe Good Technologies examples, those are very effective in their ability to protect data, but the container is also a constrainer. I'm constrained and I have to move to a secure place to access content. I need to use a specific application, not maybe the one I use on my PC to access corporate email in the case of, let's say, Good as an example. And so you have a container that contains the apps, that contains the data. And so it's very effective at securing things, but it also means I need to stop. I need to change my behavior, or I have to stop using the apps like Microsoft Office as an example in order to protect the data. When we move the technology down the stack into the platform itself, instead of building a protection solution that sits on top of the platform, which is as these others are, we can basically do a lot of this work and all the heavy lifting behind the scenes in a way where we don't have to interfere with the user experience to the same degree.
Yeah, because that's one of the things that does start to cause those little tiny breakdowns in your security. When you have to make users do something which doesn't feel natural to them, they do exactly that. They work a way around it. So when they have to have a password which is 64 characters long, they write it down underneath their keyboard. It's the little life hack that they put in place in order to make things work. So they always try and work out a way, I guess.
Yeah, you know, I remember when we were meeting with analysts earlier this year, and we first started describing this feature, and their initial reaction was based on their previous experience with DLP products. Mm-hmm. And as we went through the presentation and they started to realize, wow, the difference here is we're not building DLP on top of the platform and being limited to what the platform will allow us to do. We're actually making this an inherent part of the platform itself. The light bulb went off and they're like, ah, I see. The friction that I'm used to with DLP can go away when the platform is doing it behind the scenes and making intelligent decisions by itself.
Yeah, I think that's going to be one of those bits of learning that IT guys are going to have to go through, and it's going to be some of the teaching that IT guys are going to have to go through as well. The fact that they can explain to their organization that actually putting DLP in place isn't going to be something which makes our business slow down. It's just going to happen.
Yeah.
And therefore, it's going to be something that is going to be adoptable.
Yeah, exactly. And then another challenge to DLP, other than the friction, which I think was usually the number one reason why people didn't deploy it, although they did pervasively on mobile because they had to, is they usually didn't do DLP on desktops because the solutions were expensive and some of the friction things. Well, this is integrating the platform. Mm-hmm. You can turn it on using policy, so there are no big heavy lift or large set of machinery and server infrastructure that you need to put in place to make this work. You can effectively use policy, and Windows itself does all the work. So it's a very lightweight system for that reason, very easy to deploy. If you're used to configuring things with policy, you'll know how simple that is. And so that was another key thing for us to do, is deliver a DLP solution that was easy to provision.
So we've got about 10 minutes left. What else is there inside of the security stack that we're beginning to just start to explain to people about Windows 10?
Sure. So let's maybe move to threat resistance.
And so
this is a really big area of investment. At TechEd, we're not able to actually disclose everything because we're actually still working on some of those investments and trying to figure out, you know, how effective will they be before we start talking about them. So I'll just give you kind of a fragment of what we're doing. But one of these items, I think, is pretty substantial. So the first thing that we're going to do is we're going to give you a technology that enables you to lock down your PC in the same way that your mobile phone is locked down today. Mm-hmm. And so if you remember with Windows 8 and 8.1, we had an edition of Windows that allowed you to lock down the device. It only ran store-based applications and the applications that were signed by Microsoft. And so the beauty of that solution, like we experience on this Windows phone or an iOS device, if you have those, is you experience very low rates of malware on them. And why is that? Well, they're locked down so that they can't run arbitrary code. And so that's the problem we have on devices. If your device can access content anywhere in the world on the web and run arbitrary code that comes from an untrusted or a trusted source, that's a difficult problem to solve, right, from a malware perspective, because the attackers will exploit that. So when we moved into mobile platforms, what we did is we created a process where the phone's locked down to only run trusted applications. The applications go through a vetting process, so the vendor goes through a process to validate that they're a legitimate vendor. Once they're approved and we verify that, hey, this is a good company to do business with, it's legitimate, they then can submit their applications to the store process. We then vet the applications and review them using automation, and in some cases even humans are looking at these apps to make sure that they don't have malicious code embedded within them. Mm-hmm. So we have some vetting process there, and then of course the applications are signed. They're provisioned through a store, and I can pretty much say that, you know, anytime I go to the store and download an app, that app's something I can probably trust, right? Mm-hmm. It's not that malware can't get into the ecosystem, but we can basically narrow the opportunities dramatically because there's gates in the process. Now, we don't have that on PCs today, right? And the reason why we don't have that on PCs today is because, you know, the part of it is just because we're used to getting applications from anywhere we want, right?
Yeah.
Imagine if I couldn't go to downloads.com and download some interesting application that I read about.
Yeah,
that would be a level of friction that would create a lot of dissatisfaction. So the solution that we're going to provide is one, is it's going to be targeted at very specific customers. It's going to be targeted at enterprises. And so customers who buy Enterprise Edition and buy a PC like that one there that is specifically locked down by the OEM, we'll be able to participate in this trusted app ecosystem for their desktop PCs. And so the challenge we have is, of course, is, well, if I can only get applications from the Windows Store, that's not going to work very well for business, right? Because they have applications from third parties, they have line of business apps.
Business stuff, yeah, absolutely.
Exactly. So what we're doing is we have effectively three options. Option one is anything from the store can be trusted. So that's one trusted source. Trusted source two is ISVs. who use a signing service that we will provide to them, and they will be able to sign their applications, and they'll go through a similar vetting process. We'll vet the organization, just like we do with apps that go in the store, and then we will then sign, well, they will sign their own applications, and then those apps can be made available in the store. And these aren't just universal apps, these also can be Win32 apps. So anything that you're running in an environment from an ISV, in theory, can go through this process and be made available through the store. Or you can download it from their website. So you can kind of pick which path you want to acquire the content through. So that's option two. Option three is related to your line of business apps. So, you know, obviously, maybe those are homegrown, in a way, your own ISV for those applications.
Yep.
That same signing service that we make available to ISVs will be provided to enterprise customers, and they'll be able to sign their own applications as well. So we'll vet the organization, make sure that they're actually the organization they say they are. They'll be given a special process to sign their own applications using a special signature that is unique to their organization. And now, effectively, we have a situation where any possible app in the world could be run on those devices as long as it's signed using one of these processes. And so so this will be great. I mean, we're really excited about the potential of this on particularly POS systems.
Yep.
We've seen a lot of attacks on POS systems. Mm-hmm. For those in the US, they're probably familiar with the Target breach and the Home Depot breach and the Kmart breach and the Dairy Queen breach.
We
could go on
those
and
if
on
if you've
and
been
on.
Alive,
yeah.
Basically.
Yeah. And all of those breaches could be mitigated with this technology because these devices can't run arbitrary code. Mm-hmm. Even if it's signed, it needs to be signed using our process, and we're pretty confident that our vetting process will help keep the bad actors out of the trusted app ecosystem.
So what it would essentially mean is that say I'm an ISV, I'm writing my application. Well, let's use Microsoft as an example.
Mm-hmm.
So we want to have people running in this ecosystem. We want people to use Excel inside of this ecosystem. So the Office team would apply to get Excel signed,
mm-hmm.
but that wouldn't automatically mean that, I don't know, Zoomit is signed from the same organization. They'd have to apply to get that signed as well.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah,
and that therefore means that you couldn't just spoof that by saying it was a Microsoft application and therefore inject malware onto the system because the actual binaries have basically got to have gone through that review process as well, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, if you ever got into a situation where malware attempted to tamper with one of these signed apps, that invalidates the signature. And the theory is that our process of vetting and access control would prevent somebody with malicious intent in using your own signature. Now, there are some threat vectors we need to consider, and mm-hmm. so maybe we can talk about those for a minute. One threat is at the store entry point, right?
Yeah.
If I was able to gain the privileges of an ISV and access their signing process, so let's mm-hmm. say I stole their credentials,
yep.
Then in theory I could also sign my applications on behalf of the ISV. So it's really important that the identities that are used to access the service are held by trusted people. That we're using two-factor authentication, obviously.
Yep.
And I think those are the two things you got to do is really just make sure you're using strong identity with this service, and that you have really a limited set of people within your organization who have access to this process. This is not something you want a large number of people all having the ability to sign applications on your organization's behalf. This is something where you really want to trust the people who are doing this. These are senior people in your organization who you can trust over time.
Yeah, and so just going down to the last minute or so in terms of final thoughts to leave people with, I guess it's probably a good idea to start understanding how RMS is working at the moment.
Oh yeah, we kind of skipped that. Yeah, so for those of you who are wondering, like, well, where does RMS fit in the mm-hmm. picture with this new enterprise protection DLP feature that we have in Windows? It dovetails perfectly.
Yeah.
So this is not a replacement for RMS. This is something that complements it and covers something that it doesn't. And so the way I like to characterize this solution is the feature that we're shipping in Windows 10 is about providing automatic persistent data protection at a file level like RMS. It doesn't require a user to opt in, as we had talked about. And so now RMS is really about sharing the content. Mm-hmm. And so think about it as Windows can protect the content. And when I want to share, and I want to share a file and share the key to decrypt that data so I can use it on a on my device. RMS is the service, and Azure RMS are the way the keys get exchanged. So cool. It's really about sharing at this point.
Yeah. Awesome. Thank you very much for joining us, Chris, to take us through security for the past 30 minutes. Coming up next, we're going to have Craig on. Craig's going to come and talk to us a little bit about Windows 10 for Education and how it's going to fit specifically into that space. Thanks very much for watching.